Well, today's sermon is when things get real with Jesus. And I thought, wouldn't it be just like a preacher to script that whole thing from beginning to end and preach a sermon with 3 points and see if we can't get real with Jesus by putting Jesus into a nice little outline. So instead of that, I thought of some folks that have a story that has touched me on a couple of occasions about their faith walk and about when things get real with Jesus. And I thought it would be great if we could just let them talk with you. I see that we're all blocked off here, so. How's that? Better? Okay. So we have the Atarji family here, Judea, Nadia, and baby Rowdy. And we're just going to do a little talking about a faith walk, about a faith journey. And so I don't know if y'all talked about who wants to start, but I would like for y'all to begin by talking about your formative years, that coming up with faith. What was that experience like?
Is this on?
It's on.
I didn't know if we had to touch it or anything.
You know, you're just going to, I'm going to, okay. Yeah, go ahead.
So I was born and raised in a cult, kind of based off Christianity, but started in the 70s when most of the cults really got going, up in the Sierra Nevada mountains. And it was, women had absolutely no rights. It was ran by a woman, but women didn't have any choice in it. And it was like really extreme. We were excommunicated when I was 12, right before I was actually gonna get baptized. So when I was baptized here, it was the first time I was ever actually baptized. We were excommunicated because my older sisters wanted to wear pants. They were like punk rockers and into sports. And we got kicked out.
That was it? That was the reason?
Well, my mom was single. She had a bunch of kids. I think we were poor. It was some wild amount, like 40% of your income. And she had a bunch of children and 3 jobs and was single. And my sisters wore pants. It was really that big of a deal.
That is always the focus.
It is.
Right. Do you remember, I know that was hard on all of you, do you remember what it felt like to you as a 12-year-old, a child, what that felt like to be told you're not welcome at church?
I lost all my close friends, and I lost, because we had to go to church like 4 or 5 days a week. Like, it was full-time situation. I just remember being like, oh, now I'm going to hell, because it's an end of the world, like apocalyptic cult. So when the world ended, I was going to end with it, and there was no way I'd be saved. Mm-hmm. And then they kicked us out like right before my baptism. Mm-hmm. So then I knew I definitely wasn't going to be saved.
Yeah.
So it was terrifying.
So for those of you who were here when Nadia and Judea became members of the church, that's when we baptized them. And so that's what she's talking about when she was baptized here.
Yeah.
Well, what about you, Nadia?
I spent part of my childhood in the Middle East. My father was a Muslim. My mom was a Christian. My mom was a Pentecostal Christian. So I grew up watching my dad practice. And then my mom would never let us go with my dad, so we would stay at the house and practice with my mom, so we were raised Pentecostal. We came to the States when I was about 9 years old and started going to church there. At some point, things kind of changed with my mom, and she started using religion as a disciplinary tool. It became, if you did something wrong, it's because God was punishing you. That happened up until I was like 16, 17 years old, until she finally left. She left in the middle of the night. I never felt... I was always angry with... the church and with Christians in general, because in my mind, if that was, you're telling me that's what Christianity is that God is going to punish me my entire life for little things, and that it turned into like physical abuse, mental abuse, then I didn't want to have any part of it. I didn't want to go where she was going, you know? Yeah. So I completely just, once she was gone, I never, ever thought I would end up in a church again, right. Honestly.
So we're going to jump to that part. Something did, because the two of you, before you showed up here, you had decided that you were going to give church a try.
Yeah.
So what was behind that?
I usually come to Juge with like ideas or suggestions sometimes.
That's good.
But I always do research before I do. I usually have things lined up like this, you know, like one day I was like looking at stuff and I decided to go ahead and ask her because I'd been thinking about it for a while. I don't know why.
And I talk about it a lot because I've never lost my faith.
It a lot.
I've always been, I pray in tongues with people like of all denominations. Like mm-hmm. I've never ever lost my spirituality.
So let's stay right there for a minute, okay? So there's 10, 15 years in between, in between this, but you never lost your faith. So what was sustaining you during that time? What was it?
Because I just had it.
What
it was already there.
What was it? What did you have?
I already had my connection. It was already built. I didn't like the construct of church, but I knew spiritually, like, I still prayed all the time. I prayed with people of all denominations. I prayed with people that were atheists. I struggled for a little bit trying to figure out why I was, like, the gay thing, so I was like,
you know.
That'll
do it, man.
That'll do
it. When I came to terms with it, I was like early 18, 19, and I was just like, well, there's nothing really I can do about it because I'm definitely not straight, so I guess that I'm just supposed to be made this way, and if this is the way that I'm made, then it can't be wrong.
And made in the image of God.
Yeah, and it's the right thing for me, and if I'm going to go against that, then I'm going to be going against myself, and then that can't be faith.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I just stayed, and I talked to her about it, but it's on her terms.
Bless you.
It's not, you know, I can't make someone want that, but I can show up and give support and love.
That's what your faith asked of you. Mm-hmm. To continue to pray, to continue to walk, to continue to invite, it sounds like. Mm-hmm.
She was really craving it, and I could tell that she was really craving it, you know, like wanting to go back, wanting to make our own terms with it, make our peace with whatever, have that like weird closure thing of going to church your entire youth, and then all of a sudden it stops. And I never got to form my own opinion or relationship. And I felt selfish to constantly be like, no, I'm never. No, I'm never. All the time. I would just constantly be like, I'm never. I'm never going to go back. Ever. Ever, ever, ever. And here I am.
Because they never say never, right?
Never say never.
So do y'all want to, that for me is a big part of this. You know, it's like they're saying, they're walking on the road and they're hearing all these things that they've learned, they've been taught and everything, but there is something in their heart that is burning. And sometimes I think we can lose sight of that. Ritual is beautiful, and sometimes the only safe place to rest is in ritual and sacrament, but there is also that part that's the unscripted part, that's your heart burning within you, right?
Yeah.
And that's what didn't leave you. Mm-hmm. And so tell them the story about how you ended up visiting us. It wasn't because we were so attractive and there were so many boxes.
It
we
was hot outside.
We did have a list of churches to go to. There was one that was closer to us. in East Austin, and we were like, okay,
she was like 13 weeks pregnant.
I was newly pregnant, yeah. And I was having very bad sickness. And so this church was really close by, and we're like, okay, we're going to go. We're going to try. Just give it a try and see if we like it. If we don't like it, we just leave. And so we like driving, and Jude just like looking it up on her phone. She's like, oh my gosh, they only have church outside, and it's so hot right now.
Yeah, it was like 100 degrees. And we didn't have chairs. Like, what, are we just going to stand there?
It's like, she was like, you're pregnant. You're not going to go sit outside in the heat, newly, you know, like, you're going to get sick. We're not doing that. So she calls this church.
I called here, yeah. And I asked Amanda, I was like, hey, are you gay friendly? Like, and Amanda just goes, yeah. And it was so cute. And I was like, oh, she's like, we got flags here, we got a flag there, you'll see a flag, there's a flag everywhere. And so I was like, okay, cool.
We didn't know how friendly.
Yeah, we didn't know how gay.
Until we showed up. Because, I mean, in all honesty, a lot of churches can be like, oh, like, you know, we're friendly. And you go in and you're like the token gay couple of the church, where they could be like, we support the gays because you're here. Oh. You know? And then we walked in.
Yeah.
And our mind was blown. I have never seen so many people from our community in one place of worship before in my entire life. Nor did I ever think that it was a thing, honestly.
And how else also do you find, like, your elders, not to say that you're elders, but talk, you know
no,
what I mean.
Talk, no. That's very important. That's very important. Will you talk about that? You're already in trouble. Yeah. So just...
Go ahead, Judge.
Oh, I thought you wanted to take this one.
Well, it's true. You go through life, and then, you know, coming in and seeing people that have survived so many amounts of hate. And
it was the first of the month. We came at the first of the month.
So you were doing lighting the candle for HIV AIDS.
And we were like dumbfounded. We were like oh my gosh. Because it's rare to be able to communally remember. And I mean, it was the 80s, so I was just being born at that time. But like, I've never seen so many like older gay couples like together. Outside of like a drag show, like to see, seriously,
it's true.
and I produced Lesbian Pride for all of Seattle for 8 years, yeah. And to see so many like family, to see family, to see nuclear family, like families. In our elders, to see older like lesbian couples, that's like so cool for us, like to know that like it's okay, like that we. Like, you don't have to be, like, at a gay bar or a party to still have a community within the gay community. It's, like, it's hard. It's really hard to find that. And it's hard to find
religious
home.
Gay,
yeah, it's hard to find
community.
Home when all of the folks you have to look up to are all straight couples that kind of get you. They, like, I don't know. And it's cool to see so many living older gays, mm-hmm. especially gay men.
Mm-hmm.
It's true.
And so then, Rowdy.
And we didn't tell anyone we were pregnant either, so Nadia just slowly started. They noticed, though. They had bets going up here.
Are
choir.
You?
Yeah. They were keeping an eye. They're like, something's going on with that girl. She's good.
So why is it important now?
I think it's important now that I can show her, really, and myself, that this is a possibility, this is an option. You don't have to discount yourself or your family or give anything up. You can have your comfortability, you can feel the amount of love, you can have your community without having to sacrifice yourself. You know, knowing that Rowdy even can walk in here and just look around and be like, oh yeah, you know, this is great. These are my people. I love that. I love that so much. I mean, representation matters.
And I think for me, like, just having, you know, we talk, you always hear in every religious setting or Christian religious setting, it's always, we talk about Jesus, but, like, it's hard to hear people talk the talk, and then literally they don't even see it. Their sand is just completely washed clear. There's not, they're not following anything because it's this hierarchy and this, like, it's, Jesus would have held every single one of our hands. He would have, any single addict, he would have loved them. Every single one of those folks who died from AIDS was held, and they were not alone. And I, like, truly, deeply believe that. And I feel like there's such a, we always say, like, what's home? And, like, at my job, we talk about that a lot, like, creating home for people. And, like, when you, like, a catastrophic loss of family is also how you lose yourself in your home. And I just take so much of the lessons from Jesus that he created home where he went, because he showed no matter what, he was family and he was love. And I feel like that message gets so lost. And when we were welcomed to communion in Algate, and we had communion our first time together, and the first time I was ever even allowed to take communion, even though I've been going to church forever, never been allowed to, that to me, I was like, oh my gosh, this is what it feels like to be home, to, like, be seen and be home. And, like, this is what I want to be a part of, because this is the first time I've ever seen the actual whole body of people communally walk in the same steps like that Jesus would have. And that's big to me, because I want my daughter to see that in me and the people around her.
That's true. Yeah, I've never heard the importance of trans people's lives ever brought up in a church my entire life. And I think that is just so beautiful for them to also be able to have this space and feel so safe in this space and have their families in this space. I mean, we never left. You know, after we walked through those doors, I was like, okay, we're not.
As long as we kept the air conditioning going, you were
going to
stay.
Yeah. It's true.
We even came when she was pregnant to clean the outdoors.
I know.
We still came in the heat. And we put her to work outside.
It's a wonderful story. Thank you for sharing the story and sharing yourselves and sharing baby Rowdy.
She's so good. Look at this. She's like,
she's really, yeah.
She's hanging out.
Have a baby, they said. It'd be easy.
So a few things I would like to say. Yeah. This is a wonderful story to hear. I hope you feel it. I hope you feel it. And I want to say a few things about it. Because I think it's important, above all, to be honest and to be authentic, right? In this Jesus place, in this believing that God is unconditional love. In this place, we must be honest. And so I want to say about the AIDS candle and all of that, I want to also acknowledge that it is still not a completely safe place for people to talk about their HIV status. There are debates about, you know, PrEP or no, what does that mean? All of these things are still happening. We don't have it all figured out. We're not as open as we could be, as we're not always providing the invitation to bring us all who you are and let us love and support you. But we are trying. Also, it's important to me to acknowledge that people and churches all over the U.S. are doing just what we're doing this morning. Yes, there are some who are building up walls and who are afraid of what a unconditional love from God might really look like, but we're not the only ones. We don't have a market on it. Neither does MCC churches. There are churches and people of faith and different faiths all over the world this morning that are inviting people in and doing their best to love and honor and respect. I don't want to...
We're not putting down all the other churches.
No, I know. And you never have, and I think that's important for all of us. And I also think, you know, we're in this odd position because we have been the safe haven for a very long time. MCC churches for over 50 years. Our friends in Houston are celebrating 50 years as a congregation today. So that is all wonderful. And I hope that anyone sitting here who is not part of the LGBT community understands that you are part of our community and God's family. And the thing I think we're learning is LGBTQ are not the only ones who have been hurt in church.
Yeah. That's true.
Or who have found that churches can drive wedges between people and God. There are all kinds of reasons that we have felt disappointed by a church, disappointed in church leaders.
Yeah.
And my prayer for us is that, because, you know, they say it's like hard drive crashes. It's not if, but when. When will your feelings be hurt by your church or your leadership in your church? When will you be disappointed in someone's choice or someone's actions? Not if, but when. And what brings us through that? Well, Cleopas is walking down the road and he is angry because he feels like Jesus has failed him because he died. And he was angry at 1,000 others. Remember, he said, I'm angry at 1,000 others I could name. But when Jesus Christ is at the center, then what we realize is all of that is stuff. All of that is stuff. And what we could be doing each day is trying to figure out how do we live more in the image of God, more as disciples of Jesus Christ, taking this grand experiment that is church and trying to create a community that God would not only recognize, but delight in. So I hope that wherever you are in your journey, as you hear this story, it's just a launching place for you to consider your own, to consider those moments when maybe you felt like it's time to give up on the church or organized religion, but God just wouldn't let you go. To think about what are the things that you need to be loved for, loved in spite of, loved imperfectly, and join those into your faith walk with this community, and let us try together. Sometimes I think the realness of the faith and the burning hearts can get lost in all the plans and all the stuff. So I wasn't certain exactly what would happen today. I knew the two of you have a beautiful story, which you're very generous in sharing. And I'm glad that it was hot that day and that you found us. And whatever brought you here, I hope that you will enter as joyfully and enthusiastically and bring your whole self, your real self, your true self to us, because we are going to be more of who we are when you bring who you are to us. So thank you.
Thank you.
And amen.
Amen.